This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at an employee seminar held on February 4, 2026 in Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Those of you that were here yesterday heard me make a comment about, well, yesterday morning, I think you're going to hear it this afternoon, is a topic on managing our ego. And sometimes our ego can run away with us a little bit. And I was encouraged by someone on my way out here that, you know, sometimes we need to make just enough mistakes that we keep ourselves humble. And I've already started out with one on the board this morning. So we'll see. Maybe we can... Hopefully we can keep from having too many more on there. So our topic is questioning to understand. Somewhere around the turn of the last century, somewhere it was in the very late 1800s, there was an article that was written, and it was published in a really small publication. And within a few years of its printing, it had been reprinted millions and millions of times. And over the years, till it's been printed somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 250 million times, there's argument on that. But so it was very widely reprinted, and it really struck a chord with a lot of the business owners and executives at the time, because what it done was it called out the lazy incompetence and just general unmotivatedness of workers at the time. And this was written from one man's perspective, and he obviously had a somewhat bad attitude. And if you want to look it up, it's called A Message to Garcia. It's a really good example of creative writing. I don't know how accurate it is, but he really spent a long time, he went on a diatribe against the way that people approach their work. And the hero of his story was an army lieutenant that had been asked by the government just before the Spanish-American War to go to Cuba and take a message to one of the insurgents in Cuba, and it was going to help the war effort that they knew was coming. And so they called this lieutenant in, and they give him this message, and they said, "We want you to take this to this man named Garcia, and we know he's somewhere in Cuba. He's in the mountains, in the jungles. We don't know where, but take this message." And they made a lot in the story about the fact that he didn't complain. He didn't try to get out of it. He just took the message and disappeared into the jungle and found Garcia. And really the biggest thing that this guy had on his mind when he wrote this was he didn't ask any questions. He just had a job to do, and he did it. Well, today we're going to spend, you know, the next 40 or so minutes talking about why we should ask more questions. So how do we balance this? Well, there's probably a right time to ask questions, and there's probably a time where we just need to move forward and do the job that needs done. And there is a place for not complaining about what we've been asked to do and just putting our head down and getting to it. We're going to be talking mainly today about situations where there's an issue that needs to be solved. There's a problem that's arisen, and many times it has to do with relationships that we need to ask more questions. We need to get in that habit of questioning. So before we start, I'd like to ask a couple questions. And by raise of your hand, how many people in here are in a management or leadership position? Show of hands. Quite a few. How many of you expect that someday, if you're not now, how many of you expect that someday that you will be? Show of hands. Those of you that didn't raise your hand the first time or the second time, I've got news for you. At some point in some time in your life, you're going to be called on to lead. And if you don't have the skill in your or the tool in your toolbox of asking questions and being thoughtful and curious about things, it's going to go harder for you. I think it was mentioned yesterday in one of the talks that none of us, very few in this room that are in leadership, probably set out to be there. It's something that happened to us. We were just doing our job, and the next thing we know, we look behind and there's people that we're supposed to be leading. And for us men, that happens at home, whether we have it happen at work or not. Most of us, if we're married, that's a call to leadership right there. Learning to ask questions and questioning to understand. And really, that's what we're trying to get at. We're going to talk about questions, but really, the point of this whole thing is that we want to question so that we can understand and really get to the bottom of issues and be able to solve them. So the emphasis today is going to be on understanding, even though we're going to talk a lot about questioning. In the book, 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, by Dr. Stephen Covey, there's this quote. If I were to summarize in one sentence the single most important principle I have learned in the field of interpersonal relations, it would be this. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. Seek first to understand. And another thing that I've noticed, I don't know if when they put the topics together for this seminar that they really knew how much interconnection there was going to be, but over the last yesterday and already this morning, the connection between these topics has been great. I've already heard, I think I heard this morning already at least once, that we need to seek to understand. And you know, I don't think that anyone here would argue that point, that we need to understand before we're understood. But how many times we find ourselves in a situation where, if we stop and think about it, we don't really know everything that we should know about the situation, but we're pushing our opinion or our thought. We're wanting to make sure that they understand me. So the goal is that we're going to try to find some motivation, inspiration, and maybe some tools on how we can question to understand. So how many questions do you think that you ask in a day? We did a little research and we found that children between 2 and 5 ask from 100 to 300 questions a day. Seventy-five percent of those are being asked to their mother, by the way. The mothers in here are probably all nodding inside. Teenagers ask between 3 and 10 questions a day. It's dropped off a bit. Then by the time we're adults, it's come back up a little. We're up to 20 to 30 questions a day, and that can depend on your occupation, your gender, your station in life, your personality. There's a lot of things that feed into that. But it's somewhere between 5 or between 20 and 30. So between the age of 5 and 25, what do you think happens? Where do all those questions go? What happens when a child is around 5 years old? They go to school. We send them off to school. And when they get to school, what are they supposed to have when they get to school? The questions are coming to them. They need answers. And so they spend the next several years being concerned about having the right answer at the right time so that they can get a good grade on their test. But you might say, well, the reason that we don't ask so many questions when we're adults, we've asked 100 to 300 a day when we were children. We've got all those answers, so why would we ask questions now? Well, you know the nature of the questions that children ask. They're pretty basic. They're pretty simple in some cases. You know, where is God? Do kittens go to heaven? Why is the washer making that noise? Why'd Daddy slam the door? And maybe, why is Mommy crying? But as we get older, those questions and those situations that we might need to know about get a little more complex. But the thing that happens is that we lose our curiosity. And there's a number of reasons for that. We're going to talk about some of them, of why we might not be curious. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, that we've gotten into such a habit of giving answers and being expected to have answers that we lose that sense of curiosity that we had as we were children. And we want to say that asking questions, it's not enough to just ask questions. We have to ask a question, and then what? We got to really listen. We need to ask the question, then lean in and listen, when so many times my tendency is, I ask the question, I let you talk for a little bit and figure out where you're going, and then my mind switches to, okay, what am I going to say? Because it's pretty important, and I wish he would be quiet so I could say the thing that I need to say. If that's the mode that we get into, then it becomes really hard to understand the problems that we need to understand and to ask the kind of questions that we need to ask. So we're going to begin with this assumption that we want to have good communication and that questions are part of good communication, and they begin with curiosity. And a curiosity is just a strong desire to know or learn something. Strong desire to know or learn. What do we need to learn about? What is there that we should know? There's a lot out there that we should know. If you think about all the opportunities that come your way in a day's time or a week's time that are complex, they might involve relationships, they might involve things that are going to take a little bit of sorting out. They're out there, there's lots of them. And the more we know, or the less we know, the more we should probably stay away from those problems. But someone's needed, and I think that's us. We need more understanding. World War I was a horrible conflict, one of the extremely high death toll, and it was fought mostly in France, in the farming country of France, where it was very fertile soil. And one of the problems that they had was that fertile soil would grow bacteria very, very well. So these young men would get wounded, and very quickly those wounds would get dirty and infected, and they had no way to cure the infections. So they were coming out in a steady stream of these wounded young men. They've got infections, and we can't. There's nothing we can do. There's no antibiotics. So the Allies set up a laboratory in France to try to figure out, what do we do about these infections? And there was a young Scottish researcher, medical researcher, that came there, and he spent his time studying those infections that would come into his laboratory and try to find something that would combat these infections. And he found some ways and methods of treating wounds that would help some. Most of the treatments they had were ineffective, and sometimes they even made things worse. But he never really found the cure that he needed to find. 10 years later, he was working in his lab at the University of London, and he'd come back from a week-long vacation, and he was cleaning up his workspace, and he went to clear away some of these petri dishes that he had been growing some culture on that he was studying, and it was time to clean them up and move on. And so he's moving that out of the way and he's cleaning up. He picks up one and he just happened to notice that on a large part of that dish, there was none of the infection that he had been trying to grow. It was a staph infection. It was clear. It was clean. There was nothing growing there. So he became curious about it. And he started to ask himself some questions. And that's a lot of times where it starts. We have to have curiosity enough in our mind to ask ourselves the questions. And so he started to ponder that. He talked it over with his lab assistant, and they knew that there had been another discovery that they had made that had came about in much the same way. So they dug into it. And sure enough, they found that there was a mold spore that had came from another lab on the floor below that had somehow made it into this lab and landed on that dish and prevented the infection, the bacterial infection, from growing. So, as we know, that's what led to the discovery of penicillin. And they were still a good ways off from having readily usable penicillin, but because he was curious and he stopped to ask the questions, why is it like that? What happened here? Why did the infection not grow? But it started with noticing something that was a little out of place and being curious enough to ask the question. And so I would ask, how many times do you think we're that one small question away? That one question from something that would lead to something that would be life-changing for lots of people. We need to slow down. We need to be curious when we have those things pop up. So healthy curiosity leads to thoughtful questions. We believe he had healthy curiosity. And that's what we're interested in. Healthy curiosity can lead us to asking questions that are going to uncover things that we need to know. And we want to say up front here, there is such a thing as unhealthy curiosity. There's curiosity that will that we hear the term unbridled curiosity, and we know that that's something that we want to stay away from. It'll lead us into places that we shouldn't be. And it can be dangerous and harmful. Sometimes we can be curious in simple ways and get into trouble. I remember my oldest sister, when she got her driver's license, she was driving on an icy road one day, and she remembered that a couple of her friends were with her, and they were discussing the fact that they were taught in driver's ed that you're not supposed to slam your brakes on an icy road, because that will cause you to go out of control. This was long before the days of anti-lock brakes. And they were discussing this, and they were curious whether that was really true. And so they decided to try it. Thankfully, they were on a backcountry road where there was no one around. They did land in a snowbank, and I remember the story well because I rode with my dad in the pickup truck when we went to pull him out. So we don't want to be curious about everything. There's some things that we need to take at face value. We've been told that this is the way it is. You need to remember that and listen to that. Another thing about curiosity and healthy curiosity is that I find many times, or it really probably hardly ever leads to the path of least resistance. It's going to be uncomfortable. It's probably going to be uphill somewhat. If we really are going to have the conversations and ask the questions that are going to solve hard issues, it's probably going to be uncomfortable. It's not going to be easy. And you're going to find these types of things in every area of life, not just business. You're going to find them at home. You're going to find them at church. You're going to find them in the community. Things that are larger issues, a lot of times they're relational. You're going to find them everywhere. So, healthy curiosity leads to thoughtful questions. What is a thoughtful question? I want to say that a thoughtful question is asked in the pursuit of truth. It's asked in good faith, meaning it's sincere, It's honest, has no hidden agenda. And it's asked in the spirit of sacrifice. If I'm asking it in the spirit of, in the pursuit of truth, and I don't have a hidden agenda, and I really want to know the answer, I might learn something that goes against a long-held opinion that I've had. I may have to sacrifice that. So it's in the spirit of sacrifice. And you know, that's easy to say. It's not as easy to do, because we when these things come up, we don't always have time to prepare for them. We may be in a conversation with somebody and a subject comes up that we're challenged with, and maybe one of our long-held beliefs gets challenged. And what do? We haven't had time to necessarily prepare for this, and we don't have time to think about, okay, I want to really get at the truth here, and I want to make sure I don't have a hidden agenda. You know, there's just so many ways and places that we can get into these things. Maybe you're talking with somebody that you've had issue with in the past, and something comes up, and you thought this was buried, but something came up, and all of a sudden, this issue is in front of you. Or maybe it's an issue that you didn't even have, but maybe your ancestors had issues with their ancestors. If you remember in John chapter 4, there's a very interesting account there that we all know about when Jesus was and his disciples. They were going through Samaria, and they'd stopped in this town, and the disciples went to get food, and he's sitting there on the side of the well. And likely he was thirsty. He asked for a drink from a woman that approached. She had a water pot. He had no way to get the water. So he asked for a drink. And we don't know whether she gave him the drink or not. It doesn't say, but it does record some questions that she asked him. And I think we all probably know the background of the story. There was a lot of animosity, and she knew that this was somebody that they typically even go around. They don't even come through town. They don't come through our country. And so it wouldn't have been surprising if she would have just ignored him, if she would have walked away. And we don't know whether her question, when she asked it, whether it fit the definition of a thoughtful question as we give earlier. All we have there is the words that it says. We don't know what her body language was. We don't know what her tone of voice was. And there's studies that tell us that 7% of communication is actually the words that we say. Something to remember when we get into conversations that might be a little difficult, that the words we say are only a very small part. It has much to do with our tone of voice and our body language. But what was the outcome of that conversation? After she asked the questions, what was the outcome? She learned the truth. She gave up some previously held opinions. And not only that, she helped others to come to a place where they were able to give up previously held opinions as well. So her thoughtful questions had led to clarity and understanding. And that's what we're really trying to get at, is clarity and understanding before we seek to be understood. So why are we not more prone to asking thoughtful questions? There's some barriers that we want to talk about to these curiosity-based questions. And one of them is a closed or fixed mindset. And when we have a closed or fixed mindset, we know what needs to be done. Let's go do it my way. Another one is fear of vulnerability. If we have fear of vulnerability, we might think, well, if I ask this question, it might reveal a weakness. Maybe it reveals my ignorance. Maybe it reveals that I have a kind of a shady past in some areas that I really don't want anybody to know about. Maybe it reveals a fear that I have that I don't want anybody to know. So fear of vulnerability is a barrier. And then time constraints. We're all busy. There's a lot of things to do and not enough time to do it. And so we have this constraint of having enough time to ask the questions that we should ask. So let's take these one at a time, and maybe we can find some ways to surmount them. So the closed or fixed mindset. Characteristics of a closed or fixed mindset is it's practical, logical, goal-oriented, and analytical. And what does somebody look like when they're in that sort of a mindset? And I'm thinking primarily at work right now, but I know what I know what I look like, because I'm a very goal-oriented person, and people used to call me out because they say, "What are you mad about?" Well, I'm not mad at all. I'm just trying to get something done. Because my voice would get serious, I would have kind of a set jaw, and my brow was probably furrowed a little bit, and I was very businesslike, and I didn't take too much, you know, back talk, and the tension always would come up just a little bit because we got to get this done. And that is a good way to get things done when you know exactly what needs to be done, and it's an everyday task that doesn't have a lot of complexity to it. Maybe it's routine. That's not a bad mindset for implementing. But what about for the things that are more complex? And maybe it's a relational issue. Is that a good mindset to go into something like that? Generally, that's a terrible way to approach those kinds of problems. For those kinds of problems, we need to have what we're going to call the open mindset. And that's more relaxed and receptive and curious, and it at least doesn't have a frown on its face. And it's going to be more creative and curious about what's really going on. So when Alexander Fleming was in his lab that day and he saw the dish that didn't grow the culture on it like the others had, he must have been in the open mindset. Because otherwise, when he saw that there was a dish here that didn't have the culture that I wanted on it, that it's no good for what I want, it's in the way, get it out of the way, let's move on to other things. But instead, he stopped, he asked a question to himself at least, and that curiosity is what led to the discovery. And so, in the closed mode or closed mindset, an irrelevance, something like that that's out of the ordinary, uncultured dish, we'll say, is an irrelevance. It means nothing when our mind is closed. But when you have an open mind, that's a clue. That's maybe the first step in the process to getting down to the bottom of the issue. And that maybe works in laboratories, and it also works in interpersonal relations. It works the same way. When you find yourself in a situation where you have a problem to solve, you're always going to get further by starting with an open mind. And when we're in that relaxed and receptive, creative, curious mindset, we're going to be more concerned, we're going to be less concerned with being right and more concerned with knowing what is right. When I first heard that, I thought, what's the difference? And then I thought about it a little longer, and there's a big difference. In being right and wanting to be right and wanting to know what's right. And that I think is the principle that it's at the bottom of understanding. We want to know what's right. We want a good decision. So I was told once by a wise man that you need to be curious before you become angry. Be curious before you become angry. In other words, when you see something going on that shouldn't be, what's the first thing that you assume? We typically assume that they're not doing what they should do, and we become angry. Don't make too many assumptions before you have the facts. Ask some questions. And when you do, a lot of times you learn things. You learn something that you didn't know. So I had five boys, and they all liked to use tools when they were young. And there was something that seemed to happen pretty often. I would go to the toolbox, and the tools that I wanted weren't there, and I couldn't find them. And I always made this assumption that they had made off with the tools and they didn't bring them back. And sometimes, in my haste to get to the bottom of it and assuming that I knew what happened, I would really get after them, only to find it in the place where I had used it last. I don't know if any of you have ever been there, but I have a friend who says that he always thought his boys were at fault because the tools were gone. They left home and he figured out it was his wife. That's not where we want to be. Unless I suppose your wife is using the tools. So the Samaritan woman, she was going about a routine task that she did probably every day. She was probably doing it in a hurry. She was doing it in the middle of the day, which was, some would say, an odd time to do it. It was the heat of the day. More likely, they would have went and got that early in the morning, possibly in the evening when it was cooler, but we don't know. Maybe there was some company that stopped in and they didn't have enough water, and she was probably in a hurry. And not only that, there was this stranger there, and he wasn't just any stranger. He was a stranger that our family doesn't talk to their family, and we avoid them if we can. But there was something about her that day that caused her to ask a question, and it might not have only been about her. She obviously, in Jesus, had somebody that was not like ordinary men. But she was curious enough to ask a question. So Shane talked about different cultures and how we get along and how we relate to each other. There's another thing that can cause us to be in a closed mode, and that's prejudice. And the 1828 Webster definition of prejudice is, it's prejudgment or an opinion or decision of the mind. It's an opinion or decision of the mind. I've heard it said that prejudice is a good time saver because it allows you to form an opinion without ever examining the facts. Have you ever done that? Do you suppose that Anabaptists or the Plain community in general would ever deal with prejudice? Or do you think that would be something that we would ever have to deal with? Do you suppose that had anything to do with the conflict between the Jews and the Samaritans? Do you suppose there was any prejudice that had gotten formed? Sometimes our convictions, what we would believe to be convictions or strong opinions for sure, are largely influenced by our prejudice. It's things that we've possibly observed from a distance or heard, and we formed a strong opinion, and our mind is closed to the fact that there might be something else that we need to know about it. So something to guard against is prejudice. I think it can affect all of us. So the second barrier we're going to talk about is the fear of vulnerability. And if you're invulnerable, that means that you come across as strong, protected, defensive, and that leads you to being isolated. When I made this slide, when I started thinking about that, I thought about a turtle and how invulnerable a turtle is. They have this protective shell, and they defend themselves by pulling inside the shell. And to me, that's exactly what happens. They protect themselves, they're defensive, and they're very isolated. Turtles are loners. You don't see a lot of interaction, turtle-to-turtle interactions. Sometimes you'll see them sitting in a row on a log hanging over the creek in the sun, but that's probably because the log was convenient, and they really don't have that much to do with each other. But that's okay, because turtles are just doing what God created them to do. God created us, on the other hand, to be social and to have relationships, and we need to work together. So being invulnerable is not going to be a mode that we want to be in. Rather, a little vulnerability. We need openness, sensitivity, emotional honesty, and relational risk-taking. I was challenged one time by my boss with this thought of being vulnerable. When I was kind of complaining to him about the department I was trying to lead, there was two or three guys in there that I couldn't get him to follow what we wanted to do. And he looked at me and he said, "David, I think I know the answer. You're not going to like it, but you are invulnerable. You're never vulnerable. You're always holding everything inside. And so it's really hard for them to trust you." And that was a little hard to hear, but when I was honest with myself, I knew that that was exactly right. I thought that a strong leader, I thought that's how they operated. You didn't show weakness or sensitivity, and you always had to have it all together. You wanted to come across like you were the man in charge, and the man in charge surely wouldn't be vulnerable. But you know, that's exactly what I needed to do. Because, let's face it, they know. Regardless of how we try to project, the people that are close to you, they know. And if you're not admitting it, they're not going to trust you. And so that's really hard for them to ask you questions, and you're not asking questions either. So the relational risk-taking, what about that? I think that's what my boss did when he called me out. He took a risk that I'm going to say something to him that he's probably not going to want to hear, but we have a good relationship. He needs to hear it, so I'm going to go ahead and say it. What we tell ourselves a lot of times when there's something like that that we need to tell maybe a coworker, maybe it's one of our children, maybe it could be anybody, maybe a brother in the church. There's something that we really feel like they need to be told, but we hold back from doing it, and we tell ourselves that I don't want to say this because I don't want to hurt their feelings, and I don't want to make them uncomfortable. And is it really worth that? When if you really examine that feeling, who are you trying to protect? A lot of times, it's this guy I'm trying to protect because it's uncomfortable for me to have to say that. It doesn't feel good for me to have to tell you that, you know what? I think here's an area that you could improve in. We take a risk when we do that. That's part of the emotional risk-taking. Another thing could be that we risk, if you say it wrong, you could damage your relationship. So you don't want to go into it and just say, well, this needs to be said, I'm going to say it, and I guess I don't care how they feel about it, they're going to hear it. There's definitely risk in that. So you want to be careful with it, but move yourself into being a little more vulnerable, and I think you'll go a lot further, and it's a comfort zone thing for me. It does not feel good to ask a question to somebody, and in doing so, it reveals something about me that I really wish I could keep hidden from everybody. So the third, last barrier we're going to talk about is time constraints. Time constraints, we're busy. We don't have time. We just don't have time to ask those questions. We want things to happen immediately. We want to be direct, decisive, and when you do that, it feels good. We heard about dopamine earlier, and that's what's happening when you make a decision. We follow through with it. We move on to the next. We're getting hits of dopamine. It feels good, and we keep moving. And that's okay for a lot of things. But again, when we have something that's more sensitive and it's relational, we need to slow down, and we need to do some deep exploration. We need to clarify the things that we think we know. Ask clarifying questions about the things we think we know. We need to explore things we don't know yet. Is there more information here that I need to get? Ask some exploratory questions. Then we can start to develop a solution to this problem. And when you go at it that way, the solutions you come up with are going to be much longer lasting. The problem with this is, It's uncomfortable. It's no fun a lot of times, this time that you spend doing this, because it would be much better if we could just make a decision and move on. There's something called the fundamental attribution error. And I think it came up, I think one of the speakers this morning already brushed across it. They didn't call it that, but the thought is that we assign other people's bad behavior to their character, and the same thing that we do, we assign it to our situation. You get that? We see somebody else do something that is negative, and we say, they must have bad character, their motive was bad. I do the same thing, and I had to. That was a situation I was in. I really couldn't do any different. We had a rule in our plant that you never left the forks on the forklift up off the floor when you got off. And it was a safety thing, and that was just one of the rules that we had. If I ever saw that, I always would want to assume very quickly, I would assume that whoever did that was lazy and they didn't care about safety. But when I did it because I had a phone call that I had to get. When you get cut off in traffic, what do you think about that other person? Do you have nice, pleasant thoughts about that other person, usually? What about when you cut somebody else off in traffic? Well, I was going to miss my exit. I didn't have a choice. I had to do that. That's the fundamental attribution error. And that's another thing that we can get into. We make a quick decision, that other person, it's their character, it's their motive. I would never do that. Or if I did, I'd have a good reason. So we're going to wrap up here. Just to recap, we need to overcome the barriers that keep us from asking the questions. We need to remember that the closed mindset is good for implementing, but it's bad for problem solving. We need to remember that we need to leave the comfort zone of being invulnerable. We need to leave our turtle shells, and we need to get out and be more vulnerable. We need to be sensitive, and we need to be emotionally honest with people. We need to remember that quick answers don't fix complex problems or sensitive issues. And, you know, questioning, it's not just for complex problems and sensitive issues. If you learn to ask questions, ask thoughtful questions, everywhere you go, the fullness of your relationships is going to, you'll end up with fuller relationships, you're going to end up with better interactions, and it can happen anywhere. Someone yesterday talked about the four D's of business: departure, disease, divorce, and death. I want to think about the last one just a little bit. There's probably someone in your life that has some answers to questions that you should be asking, and they might not be there tomorrow. So ask the questions today. Don't wait. I got a call the day before yesterday on my way here from my son. One of his best friends, his father, somewhere around my age, had passed away very suddenly of a heart attack. Blaine's going to have questions that he wished he would have asked. We all have questions in our lives that we should be asking. And the people that have those answers probably aren't going to just be giving them to you. If they're wise and they've got some gray hair, and I really appreciate seeing some of the older ones here today, we need the wisdom that they have. We're probably going to have to ask for it, because many times they're sitting over in the corner and they're listening, and that's how they got to be wise. But ask the questions. Try to draw them out. But you might have to be vulnerable. You're probably going to have a little bit of an open mind. Because when we do that, we're going to come much closer to learning what's right rather than just being right. God bless you.